Blog Talk Radio.
Well, happy Friday to everyone, and I am Patty, the Bone Collector, and we're going to have a spooky night tonight. I thought we would do haunted asylums, poor houses, and other institutions of sadness and horror. So, Western New York is flooded with wonderful, wonderful haunted locations. And some of my favorites that have have a history to them, but also have, I want to say, human stories that kind of come right to your heart, are some of the houses and the asylums in Western New York. Not any of them except for one can you visit and actually take a tour of and do ghost hunts, but nevertheless, the stories for them all are just wonderful. The ghosts, the people behind them, and as I tell ghost stories, I try to remember that these were people's lives, so I like to dive a little bit into what got them in that situation and why they still are there. Now, we're going to start off with poorhouses because poorhouses came first, and then the state created the asylums to relieve some of the population on the poorhouses. The poorhouses were established in 18 by New York State. They were mandated to have poor houses. Each county had to have one. By 1927, 1928, each county had to be able to provide services for those that could not take care of themselves. In fact, it was kind of just the way that they described the poor. The poor were the infirm. The poor were people that had no jobs. They had no family to take care of them. They were also vagrants. They were lunatics. Anybody that could not support themselves by any means, meaning keeping a roof over their head, food on the table, being able to take care of their family. Now, also because at the time, women could not own property, so you found a lot of people that were coming into these places were families, women with children. Their husband passed away. They had no rights to own the land. Once their husbands passed, they were virtually homeless. The land was sold. It was given to male family members who were allowed to have it. And in return, not only did they lose their spouse or their loved one, a father or whatever, they lost their sense of identity. They were shipped off into these poorhouses. And in a lot of different cases, the mother was separated from her children. And a lot of counties adopted out the children from the parents, the mothers, and sometimes the fathers, because the mother couldn't take care of them. Also, there were people that couldn't speak English that were put in there because just the lack of communication with the people in their towns and counties and stuff. They couldn't find work because they couldn't speak the language. They couldn't take care of themselves because they couldn't find work. And in return, they were placed in these poorhouses. Now, the first one, I have two poorhouses that I wanted to talk about the ghost stories for. Two totally different situations, two totally different ways that people were treated in these poorhouses. The first one is the Genesee County Poorhouse, which is now known as Rolling Hills. And a lot of people have seen it on Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, numerous shows. It was on the competition show. I can't remember what the name of it was. They had one season to find out who was the best paranormal investigative team. And one of the episodes was held at Rolling Hills. Rolling Hills was a poorhouse, obviously. And it also was overrun by the insane. People that were criminally insane were often placed with children on the same floor. The rooms were unlocked. People could go in and out. So it was a bad situation. And we'll get into the part where the asylums were built to relieve these from the county and the poorhouses so that they could focus on the safety of the poor. And actually, that was part of why orphanages became prevalent at the end of the 18th century, because they found that the children were not safe in these poorhouses. There are several spirits at Rolling Hills. I'm not going to go deep into the history. You can find the history of it in my book, Ghosts and Hauntings of the Finger Lakes. So I'm not going to get into the history and bore you with that. I want to get more into the ghosts. Now, they said that over 1,700 people passed away at the county poorhouse in the 184 years that it was open, or it has been in existence. It has been open for 184 years. Actually, could have been, if I do the math in my head, it was until the 1970s it was still a nursing home. But regardless of the exact years that it's been open, over 1,700 people have died in the building itself. They have records of, and most of the people were buried on site. The field behind the buildings is a virtual cemetery. There was a cemetery, that actual cemetery that was located, but there was only a handful of graves. Six, dating to the 1880s, was all that was found in a small cemetery. But they buried these 1,700 people all around the buildings. They have records of who died, when and under what circumstances they died, but there's not a map to detail exactly where those bodies were placed and where the cemetery is on the property. So anywhere that you could be walking, even up close to the building, you could possibly be on a grave. So with over 1,700 people dying on that property, there is a very good chance that there's some spirits that still are attached there. Although most people believe that spirits stay at places that make them happy, but then sometimes they stay places that they knew nothing else but that was their home. And some people lived there for decades and never knew any other places home, so that would be where they would stay. There were people who committed suicide, such as Harrison Roths. He committed suicide in September of 1830. Shortly after the poorhouse opened, he hadn't been there very long. But there was also murders that happened, such as Dan Mock, who was strangled in November of 1885. So there are reasons for people to be there. Now, one of the most famous of the ghosts, the most prominent, the one that everybody wants to make a connection with when they are able to take a tour and investigate there, is the spirit of Roy. And Roy had been there almost his entire life. He was dropped off at the poorhouse at the age of 12, and he had gigantism, which meant that at 12, he was over 7 feet tall, and he was very disfigured. If anybody is familiar with Andre the Giant, he had gigantism. And as it progressed, because he never stopped growing, the more disfigured he got. Now, the story of Roy was that he was the son of a prominent banker in Rochester. And because of his status, his father's status in the community, and he was a prominent banker, he was well-liked. I would even say that he probably got into politics at one point. The family believed that if Roy remained with the family and in the eye of the public, that it would hurt the reputation of the father. So they decided that they would take him to this poorhouse that wasn't even close to home. There was a poorhouse right in Rochester, but they decided to take him not to Orleans County, which was the next county over, but to the Genesee County poorhouse, which was almost an hour from Rochester by car. So back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that would be an even longer trip. So his family decided that in order to further the father's career, keep his reputation, that they would adopt the out of sight, out of mind philosophy for their son, but they never came and saw him again. They left him there. Now, even though he was abandoned by his family, he adjusted. He became family with the staff, and he became family with the other people who lived at the poorhouse, and he was happy. He loved music, and his favorite music was opera, and he listened to it all the time. He had a record player, and he would listen to opera all the time, and nobody really looked at him as a disfigurement. He was 62 when he died. So he was there for 50 years, a half a century, almost his entire life when he died quietly at the poorhouse. And there is a specific area of the building, and it's called the Shadow Hallway. And people believe that, and I've seen shadows in the Shadow Hallway, I do believe that Roy's spirit is there. If you talk to Roy, if you play opera music, you will see his shadow in the doorways. And it's also been rumored that if classical music is played, he will enter the room that the music is being played in because of his love of classical music. So people go there. The Shadow Hallway is probably the one of the most famous places in that building. But there are other spirits that are there. There's a nurse that's there. They call her Nurse Emmy. And it is said that she had no compassion. She lived on the third floor of the building. She had her own room. And she was there to take care of the patients and the residents of the poorhouse, but she didn't care for them. She did her job, but she didn't care for their well-being. They also believed that she was a witch, and that she belonged to a local coven of witches, and that she would practice magic in her room. But that's a rumor. And it's also said that people break into her room and break into the building to hold ceremonies there. Now, Emmy's ghost is known to push people down the stairs and pull their hair, that she is a very malicious ghost, that she shows the same compassion towards human beings in death as she did in life. But there is a sad room in Rolling Hills that was the room, it's on the same floor, but on the opposite end of the floor as Nurse Emmy, is the room of the caretaker whose name is George. And he loved music as well. And in his room, he had an organ, a small organ, you know, like your grandparents might have in their living room. And he was a smoker, and he had trouble with his breathing, and not exactly sure why he had a tracheotomy, but he had a tracheotomy. So it would give him, at the end of his life, he had a very raspy voice. And because of the rasp, he seemed to be very grouchy. But in reality, George was one of the most kindest men alive. And at night, if you are able to investigate and be able to go on a tour, sit in George's room, because his spirit lets itself be known. He lets himself be heard through a low, raspy rumble from the area of where his bed had been. And sometimes, if you're lucky, you'll be able to hear organ music at some point into the building. Now, that's just three of the spirits at Rolling Hills. And then if you go down to the southern tier, you've got the Allegheny County Poorhouse. And the Allegheny County Poorhouse had a different feel to it. They didn't have the insane as Rolling Hills had. They seemed to have a lighter feel. They had some problems with the buildings and stuff. As with most poorhouses, money was very tight. They were given a very small budget, and upkeep was a problem. In 1880, the buildings were deemed unfit for occupation. However, it was never closed down. They actually said that if an event such as a fire would happen at the poorhouse, there would inevitably be a great loss of life, especially among the older inmates, and some of them being bedridden. Now, in 1883, they were able to replace some of the buildings, and that took a year, and they had brand new buildings. However, that risk of fire, being that they were all wooden buildings, came to fruition on May 15th, 1923. In the middle of the night, there was an explosion in the basement. And the fireman, the one who manned the furnace in the basement, was killed instantly by the explosion. And it took just minutes for the building that housed the women to be completely engulfed in flames. The caretakers, it was a woman and a husband and a wife, ran in and out of the building trying to save as many as they could. And the man who oversaw the stables, his name was Charles Sanborn, he made four trips. He went in and out of the burning building three times and carried women out to safety. When he went in for the fourth trip, the building collapsed and he was unable to come out. So he was killed. It took days for them to get all of the remains of everyone who died. There were multiple deaths because people couldn't get out of their beds. They couldn't get in. It's just so horrific. Trying to just imagining what was going through their heads as the fire just came and there was no way out. The buildings were rebuilt and now they're still standing and they're abandoned though. There's nobody there. It's been abandoned for a long time and they're actually pretty phenomenal looking buildings if you ever have a chance to drive by. Actually, it's one of the cover photos on the back of one of my books because it's just such a location that's haunting just to look at it. But what they say is that visitors who have been able to get into the building have a sense that they're being watched. And there's a piano that's in the music room. It's still there that seems to play on its own. The furniture and other objects will move throughout the building and doors will open and slam shut on their own. As if life would go on for the people in the poorhouse, even though they are no longer alive. Whether it's the spirits of the women who died in the fire or the spirits of other people that have passed away because there were numerous deaths, there are not as many as Rolling Hills, and other poorhouses do better with remembering the dead, although their cemeteries act was just numbers. If you are ever able to visit the cemetery behind the Livingston County Poorhouse, right next to the Walmart parking lot in Geneseo, there is a graveyard with the grave marked by little stone markers, but they're all numbers. And there's no records to say what coincides with those numbers. Now, I'm going to have to rush through Willard because we talked about Rolling Hills so much and we're going to run out of time. One of my favorite sayings is by Banksy, and it says, "We die twice, once when we draw our last breath, and again when the living no longer speak our name," which rings a lot more true when you're talking about asylums and poorhouses, because that is where the forgotten were placed, and they died forgotten, they died abandoned. Now, Willard was opened after the Civil War. October 12, 1869, it received its first inmate, as they were called, first patient, Mary Rote. And pretty much people were that could work and could do things. And I'm just going to touch on one or two quick stories on Willard. They did what they could to help with the things on the farm, and the Willard, it had its own farm and stuff. And it was there to, they were there to keep themselves occupied, keep themselves useful, because really some of the people that were there was nothing wrong with them. They were placed there for odd reasons, because if you ever have a chance to read an article on why people were put in asylums, you would be shocked on the most uninsane, normal things that we do now that would put you in there. Now, my favorite story is Lord's Mocha, and I try not to focus on the ghost with Willard just because of the story. However, he came from Germany. And he was very religious, and being that he was from another country, the way he acted, the way he took to his singing and stuff, to make a long story short, he believed that God was speaking to him. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. However, back in 1916, such a proclamation would get you into the psych ward. Now, he started off at Bellevue in New York City, and then he was transferred to Willard. He kept to himself the first few years that he was there, but then he decided that he wanted to be outside and working and doing the things that he loved to do. And that transitioned into becoming the grave digger. Now, he began digging perfect burial plots by hand for the deceased. And like many of the residents at Willard, he was alone. And he believed that he should pay as much respect to those people as he wished could have been paid to him. So for more than 23 years, pretty much more than half of his life, he spent digging the grave for every person who died at Willard. He dug more than 1,500 graves in his time at Willard. He perfect graves. And when he dug those graves, he said words above their bodies so that they got the dignity in death that they did not get in life. And he wanted to make sure that they got a proper burial. And although he worked tirelessly to give dignity to those who died before him, he did not get the same in return. When he passed away in 1868 at the age of 90, he was buried among everybody else that he had dug their graves. And he received the same simple numbered stake as they did. Now, in 2015, a group of people wanted to recognize Lawrence for everything that he did and for his compassion to his fellow man. So now there is a plaque on a large stone near what they believe is his burial plot. And it says, in his half century as a Willard patient, Lawrence dug 1,500 graves for his fellow patients who are buried in the cemetery, that they might have a final resting place long after the world had forgotten him. And it is called the Gravedigger. Now, people that continued on with his tradition after he passed away of digging the graves, and I want to apologize, he died in 1968, not 1868, that he watched over them. The people who dug the graves after he passed away didn't like their job because they said that the ghost of Lawrence Mocha watched over them. And if they did not do it correctly, he made it known that he was not happy with the job that he had done. Now, there are several other ghosts at Willard that I have run out of time to talk about because we just have less than a minute left of the show, and I have a couple announcements to make. First, for those of you who follow my books, Ghosts and Hauntings of the Finger Lakes was my first book. 2 weeks ago, the History Press, Arcadia Publishing came out with an adapted version for children called The Ghostly Tales of the Finger Lakes. Now, it is available at Amazon.com and on Barnes & Noble. Soon, it will be available at Under the Apple Tree, Antiques and Gift Shops in Clarkson. And speaking of Under the Apple Tree, Antiques and Gift Shop, I will be there manning the station tomorrow. Stop by, see me if you can't make it out tomorrow. It is also open on Sunday, and Cheryl, just a wonderful person that she is, will be very happy to see you. You guys have a great night, and next week, we'll see what our show is going to be on. Haven't decided yet. You guys have a great night. Have a wonderful weekend, and stay spooky. Good night.